It's the start of a new legislative session. Last year was a landmark for bipartisan compromise, but now it's an election year. River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. Will last year's productive General Assembly maintain that momentum, or will looming national and state elections keep lawmakers from getting much done? We'll talk with Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstahl, a Democrat from Council Bluffs in the first half, and then later, House Majority Leader Linda Upmeyer, a Republican from Clear Lake. How much compromise will lawmakers reach this year? Join our conversation after the news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Good afternoon. I'm Clay Masters. Today is the start of a new legislative session, and last year was a landmark one for bipartisan compromise. Agreements between Republicans and Democrats were reached on property tax cuts, education reform, and getting health care for low-income Iowans. Governor Terry Branstad called last year's session the best he could remember, and this morning, in his weekly Monday morning press conference with reporters, he said he sees a developing consensus to deal with a very focused agenda. He listed off some of those points. He mentioned Home Base Iowa, which is something to bring more veterans from out of state, a broadband initiative to connect every Iowan with internet, and anti-bullying legislation, which he said will improve the well-being of students and deal with bullying, and reducing student debt was another one that he mentioned. Governor Branstad summed up this in his morning press conference with reporters. With me here in the law library in the Capitol is Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstahl. He's a Democrat from Council Bluffs. Senator Gronstahl, thanks for being back on River to River.
Sure, happy to do it.
So as you're preparing for the legislative session, what are some of the big issues that you're focused on in your caucus?
Well, I think our caucus is very focused on education. I think Iowa's in a great position. We made significant new investments last year in enough resources for Regents institutions could freeze tuition for the first time in 30 years. Very significant new investments in community colleges. We think there's a real opportunity to capitalize on the economic recovery that's happening in this country. We actually think it's a time a rare time when Iowa can capture more of the economic growth that's starting to happen in this country. As long as we help workers match their skills to the jobs that are available out there. That's why there were significant new investments in community colleges last year.
Now, I know it's a divided election, or it's a divided legislature in an election year, and so everyone is tending to say that they can only agree on some big things. Many things won't be accomplished this session, you've heard. But if Democrats controlled both chambers, what might an agenda look like?
Well, I certainly think if Democrats controlled both chambers, we'd still be in a position with a Republican governor. If we control all three, I think there's a lot of opportunity for improving education and growing the middle class in this state. With divided government, and that's usually what Iowa has. I mean, if over my last 30 years in the legislature, there's only been one time when we held all the levers of power in state government for about 4 years after the 2006 election. So it's fairly rare in Iowa. We are the kind of the purplest of purple states. We're not Democratic. We're not Republican. Usually we end up with divided government. And I've always said, even when we had the majority, you govern with the consent of the governed. You've got to work your issues in a way that they will sell to the broad spectrum of Iowans. So if things were different, I think we're going to try and move something on minimum wage. The governor signed increase in the minimum wage back in the 80s. The Speaker of the House voted for the last minimum wage increase we had in 2007. It's been 7 years since we did that, and people at that end of the wage spectrum have certainly lost ground. So that's one of the things I'm confident if we had a Democratic House and Senate and governor that we would increase the minimum wage in the state of Iowa. But after that, I think there's great opportunity to work together, and we did that last session. I think we can do it again this session. And it's about meeting the challenges that Iowa has. And I think one of the biggest challenges we have is to grow our economy. And we have in this state about 300,000 workers that don't have a high school diploma or a GED. That's a real opportunity for Iowa. If we can get those folks that first credential of a high school diploma or a GED, it's now called HiSET, the replacement for the GED test. If we can get them at HiSET, that's the first step, and then we can connect them to career programs where they'll have an opportunity to build a better life, get a ticket to a better life. And I mentioned three people in my opening speech today. I think those are real success stories, and that's the kind of thing I want to see Democrats and the whole legislature continue to pursue.
Senator Tom Courtney of Burlington has really been the champion on wanting to raise the minimum wage. He said that it's a long path to try to reach some kind of consensus on that. Do you see the conversation starting now and evolving?
I'm actually hopeful we can get something done on it. And like I said, the Speaker of the House, you know, the last time it took almost a decade. Well, this is the seventh year. We're getting up to near almost a decade again, and recognizing that particular segment of the population has been left out of any economic growth that's been happening, I think there's a real opportunity there.
Moving on to education, the governor has said he will push a measure for bullying prevention. Last year, education reform passed a lot for the teacher side of things. I've heard different organizations say more needs to be done for students. What shape might a proposal take in your chamber for anti-bullying prevention?
Well, we'll certainly look at the governor's recommendation on that. It is tough legislation to write in a society that treasures and values free speech, and you've got to be careful about that. So we're going to look at it, but everybody knows there's too much bullying that goes on in schools. Everybody can remember back when they were in school at that time. The idea, and more of this is happening on social media. And I confess, if I had a magic answer, I'd try and do something. But I'm not sure what the magic answer is. But when you hear about kids that end up committing suicide because they've been so harassed, that is, we've got to figure out ways to raise people's awareness about this, to educate them, and to do our best to stop it when it starts happening.
What ideas have been floated in your caucus as far as a proposal to deal with the problem?
Well, we passed bullying legislation back probably in 2007, and I think our efforts to be respectful of people's civil rights, I think that's part of educating folks. I think there's some concerns that the level of bullying that goes on out there isn't all getting reported, so we're not necessarily hearing about it. Even though the law requires some level of reporting. So I think our education committee is going to work through that and try and figure out some things we can do.
Staying on education, in your remarks, in your opening statements in the Senate this morning, you talked about preschool. There's a desire to have more pre-K through 12 education availability.
Well, certainly all of the research suggests that one's intellectual capacity is determined before the age of five. And interestingly, 85-90% of your intellectual capacity is determined before the age of five. And when do we as a state start investing in kids' education? We wait until they're five. Going back, making sure parents are children's first and best teachers, and then helping kids get access to preschool is an important part of their long-term intellectual capacity. And so we're very interested. We passed a decent program a few years ago, but there are still to some degree, there are some populations that I don't think we're doing enough outreach to get them engaged in it. There are some communities that have waiting lists for preschool. So I think we've really got to look at that. And again, all of the brain research says most of your intellectual capacity is determined before the age of five.
So are those initiatives that would have to take place from a budget surplus, or where do you find the money to invest in those kind of things?
Well, one of the things we've got to do is make sure schools know how much money they're going to get, and state law requires that. But I think we're also interested in expanding what we do in terms of preschool.
If there's one thing that's going to take a priority, it's likely going to be the budget. The governor says there's only going to be a few spending increases. What's going to be a priority in the discussions that you have about the budget?
Our priority, I think we did good work on higher education last year. I think we did good work on education reform. We're going to ask schools to do a whole bunch of new things to get better results for our kids, in terms of improving the teaching profession, all of those kinds of things. To do that and not for us to not obey the law that says we will tell school districts what they're going to get the fall after next fall, leaves them in a position where it's really hard for them to plan and implement those reforms that we've asked them to implement. So we think setting that number for increased resources for local schools early is kind of job number one when it comes to education. Then I think we'd like to expand English language learners. We added a year to that last year. We think it needs probably an addition of 3 years. So we've done one. We'd like to do another one this coming year. And one after that, to make sure that immigrants that are here and don't yet know English as their language, that we give them the tools they need so those kids start learning English.
We're kind of jumping all over the place, but there was a lot that happened last year, and with the approval of property tax reform, are more reforms needed to Iowa's tax system to make it more competitive in recruiting businesses? A lot of times this is something you hear the governor talk about.
I think we can always be looking at those kinds of things, but I would also say right now the biggest group that needs help is the middle class families in our state. When we cut their taxes, that money doesn't end up just in somebody's bank account. It ends up in the economy, and that rolling around in the economy grows the economy overall. So we're interested in looking at targeted tax cuts. I think we need to help working families be able to afford childcare, for instance. So I think we're going to look at a number of tax cuts that are focused on growing the middle class.
So I'm curious to have you elaborate a little bit about giving people more access to pay for childcare. How do you do that? It's a big bill for a lot of families.
And one of the things we have in the code now is a child tax credit. You can increase that tax credit in a way that gives them more resources, make the cost of childcare deductible for them, those kinds of things, and create tax credits for that.
One of the things that's been thrown around a lot just because of what's happened in Colorado, medical marijuana. Given that many surrounding states have approved the use of medical marijuana, is that debate likely to gain any traction this year?
I think it's kind of a toss-up. I actually think it's probably unlikely the legislature will pursue it. I think there's a lot of there is good evidence that in certain limited cases, This may be a very effective drug. Things like people enduring chemotherapy and dealing with the nausea, people with MS. So there are some limited areas where that makes a lot of sense. Some of the states that have done medical marijuana have done it in so broad a way that it's really, you know, kind of semi-legalizing marijuana. And I don't think our state's ready to go down that road yet. So. There may be some discussion on it. I think it's unlikely anything passes. But again, there are some really focused, limited areas where marijuana may, in fact, be a drug that is effective for very effective for certain conditions.
Because there has been an effort by advocates to use New Mexico as an example of a state where a limited policy has been successful. That could be an issue that could maybe see some debate if this came up, but it's likely to just stay on the back.
Yeah, my sense is this is it continues to be an issue that people will maybe get educated on, but unlikely this legislature will move to conclusion on it.
Sticking with cigarettes, I guess, it's many states are considering efforts to regulate e-cigarettes. Is that a role for state government, something that might come up this year?
I think there's probably legislation that'll be pursued on that subject. I think in particular we want to make sure we don't start getting kids hooked on e-cigarettes.
Switching gears a little bit too, there was the Associated Press hosted a reporters kind of roundtable to talk with leaders like yourself. The topic came up about ethics with things that happened yesterday with Senator last year with Senator Sorensen. How might the Senate and House rules change to increase transparency for lawmakers who involve themselves in national campaigns? I mean, we're getting closer and closer to 2016. Will there be any discussions about ethics?
Well, Senate ethics clearly outlaw that practice now, and the senator that engaged in that is now gone. In a very real sense, our current ethics rules worked and got rid of a bad actor.
But he resigned, didn't he?
He resigned after an investigation that would have very likely found him guilty. Now let me point out the legislature does not have the ability to put people in prison, to fine people, to do any of those kinds of things. So that goes elsewhere. But our ethics rules worked. The senator that engaged in that is now gone. And so we're already there. We don't want transparency. We want it outlawed. And that's what our rules do, and that's what... Now, could we clarify that? We're certainly looking at that, and I've had some conversations with a minority leader in the Senate, and we hope the House pursues a similar direction.
Moving on to infrastructure, Democratic Senator Todd Bowman, from Maquoketa, chairs the Senate Transportation Committee, and he recently wrote an op-ed writing that it's a problem for roads getting worse because Iowa's road use fund is not bringing in enough money to pay for the mounting work that needs to get done. He says just to cover critical projects, another $215 million is needed. Now, some Republicans talked a lot last year about raising the gas tax, even Governor Terry Branstad, who calls it a user fee. How likely will the gas tax come up this year?
I think the governor's left that in a position where it's unlikely. The proposals he has put on the table from his transportation director, those proposals all would make Iowans pay more so that out-of-state interests would end up paying less. I think that's a bad policy. I think there's people in the legislature that are for doing something on this subject, people that are against it. So I don't know where that goes, but without a little more leadership from the governor, I think it's pretty hard to pass.
Could it be seen as a diminishing source of revenue because of hybrid vehicles or new technology in cars?
It could a bit. It could perhaps a bit be seen as that, but it's still a fuel tax as a mechanism that means out-of-state interests, as they pass through our state, pay about 25% of the total bill. So we can, if we raise registration fees, Iowans pay every nickel of that, and out-of-state interest pay zero. If we raise the use tax on vehicles, most people see it as a sales tax on vehicles, if we raise that, every nickel of that is paid by in-state interests, and so the out-of-state folks get a break on that. So all of those kinds of solutions mean Iowans pay more so that out-of-state interests can pay less. So that's why I personally, not our caucus, but I personally think fuel tax makes the most sense. There are ways to deal with those other issues. The governor has an intriguing idea on doing a tax on the value of the fuel at the wholesale level. That's a mechanism where we might be able to lower the fuel tax overall and still raise new revenue to rebuild our roads. So I think we're open to having those discussions, but so far, the governor has repeatedly offered us, maybe maybe it's not ready yet. Maybe we need a citizens commission. We did a citizens commission. Maybe we need to identify savings. We identified savings. Gee, we better be able to tell Iowans and assure them we've overall lowered those taxes. All three of those things we did, and the governor's still trying to figure out what he wants to do.
Are there other avenues you could pursue? I mean, a lot of times the gas tax is really what's talked about, but other ways to improve the infrastructure when it looks to be a pretty mounting bill that needs to pay for these crumbling roads and bridges.
Like I said, you've got to be careful with those other avenues. Sure, there can be other avenues, but if those other avenues actually mean Iowans pay more so that out-of-state interests pay less, why would we want to do that? And those out-of-state interests do use our roads.
Revenue projections suggest the state could see almost $500 million in new money in fiscal year 2015. What would you like to see the state do with new revenue?
Well, I think we need to continue to be careful. We made a set of multi-year commitments last year on reducing property taxes in the state, on a commitment to K-12 funding, and several other areas. So we have kind of committed ourselves. I think the governor is wise to talk about five-year projections and make sure that we're going to have the resources to cover the commitments we've already made. And as I said, I think job number one this year is to assure local schools that after passing ed reform last year, we are going to follow up with the resources to them to do that. So I think there's probably some room for some targeted tax cuts that will grow the middle class, but I think we've got to be careful about it.
So you could see tax cuts being a possibility.
Yes.
Wanting to switch gears a little bit again to the renewable fuel standard. That's something that many lawmakers have been talking about, the concerns about reducing the amount of ethanol that's blended into gasoline that came down from the EPA. Anything at the state level that we're going to see about this coming up?
I think it is likely you will see us challenge the folks in Washington, D.C. to not do what they've done.
What can you do at a state level?
Well, at a state level, we can't make them do anything, but we can certainly express our displeasure and recommendation. I think you will see that the Iowa House, the Iowa Senate, and the governor's office are united in our opposition to what's happened.
And speaking about the environment, what kind of things are going around your caucus about what can be done about water quality in the state, these ongoing issues like that?
Last year, we put in a one-time pot of money of about $20 million, which was a pretty significant increase. I think we came into last session with some farm groups suggesting we do $6.8 million. Well, we did about $25 million, did the $6.8 million that they wanted and other money from the state to begin to deal with voluntary water quality efforts. They are doing some of those now. They've gotten that money out or committed or mostly out and committed. I think there's a lot of pent-up demand in the state of Iowa, a lot of farmers that would like to do more in terms of cost share. And we had a growing backlog of cases where farmers were interested in working with the state and cost share and moving forward on water improvement efforts, but there weren't the resources to do that. So I think we've got to keep our eye on that, and I'd like to see us make another commitment of significant dollars. I won't put a number on it, but of significant dollars for water quality in this state.
And it sounds like we're running out of time. We covered a lot. Senator Gronstahl, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Sure. Happy to do it.
We'll be back in the second half with Linda Upmeyer. She's a Republican from Clear Lake, the House Majority Leader. That's coming up on the second half of River to River. It's River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. We're starting a new legislative session in Iowa today. Here with me in the Capitol Law Library for the second half of the show is House Majority Leader Linda Upmeyer. She's a Republican from Clear Lake. Representative Upmeyer, welcome back to River to River.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be here.
So Senator Gronstahl just laid out a lot of what his party's priorities are in the Senate for the session. What are you seeing as accomplishable in the House this year that could win support, maybe across the aisle in the Senate?
Well, I think the first thing we're going to do is focus on the budget. I think we've made real progress in making sure that we have got a expenditure that matches the revenue. We want to make sure we continue to do that and make sure that we don't make bad budget decisions that would sort of lose ground on the progress we've made filling up that $900 million budget gap that we had 3 years ago. So we want to make sure we continue to focus on responsible budgeting first and foremost. I think there are other things that members will be interested in, and we've kind of been talking about the fact that if we can't build consensus fairly early on some of these subjects, we just probably won't take them up. I think we'll have discussions about income tax. If there's an opportunity, we'll take that. But recognizing that sometimes larger issues take a little more time than one session.
So revenue projections have suggested that the state could see almost $500 million in new money in fiscal year 2015. What would you like to see the state do with new revenue?
Well, I think, first of all, the new revenue, we have made several promises over the course of the last couple of years that are going to impact our future budgets. So whether it's aligned to mental health reform, education reform, we have impact on that new money that we have to make sure we recognize. So for that will be the first thing we do. Then I think we will look at opportunities to help regions hold down the tuition, freezing tuition, doing some of those kinds of things. Hopefully there will be room in the revenue to do some of the things that we'd like to do to make college more affordable for students, make sure we do skills training so that the jobs that are available out there are something that we've got a skilled workforce to actually take advantage of. And so I think those are positive things that we might be able to do moving forward if there's room in the budget.
And Senator Gronstall mentioned that tax cuts might be a possibility. Do you see that as being a possibility as well in your caucus?
Well, certainly the governor has put the veterans issues on the table, that he'd like to do something to attract more veterans back to the state in some sort of tax relief method. And so we'll certainly look at that. But absolutely, then it looks to me like there might be an opportunity for income tax.
So the House introduced a bill last year about income taxes. The Senate could take it up this session. It's unlikely they will, but remind us what that bill would do.
That bill actually set up a flat tax. So if you remember back in the days of Governor Vilsack, when he talked about being able to mail in your tax tax receipts on a postcard, you could actually perhaps do that with a flat tax. But we also recognize that some people are nervous about a flat tax, so we would leave the other structure in place, the current structure, and then let people kind of choose, experiment with it a little bit, and then we'd be able to move forward in the future, recognizing some experience with it. So that would be one opportunity, but I think what would seem a reasonable thing is for the Senate to take a look at that bill. Amend it, do what they want to do with it, add some of their ideas to that, and then send it back for additional consideration. That's kind of how we got where we did on the property tax bill, and I would assume that the income tax bill might look similar. We've offered straight across the board cuts in the past. We can do either of those things as a starting point, but we're happy to have that discussion and look for something that we can find bipartisan support on.
And with last year's approval of property tax reform, are more reforms needed to Iowa's tax system to make it more competitive in recruiting business?
Well, I think absolutely that's true, especially when you look at the states around us that are making some pretty bold moves when it comes to their tax structures, whether it's income tax or property tax, oftentimes income, actually. So I think we do need to pay attention if we want to remain competitive in that environment for a workforce that is pretty mobile many times. So we want to make sure that Iowa continues to be an attractive state. state.
So what policies would best recruit employers and better prepare Iowa's workforce for the jobs of the future?
Well, I think it's hard to name one that would be the most attractive to everyone because it sort of depends on which area impacts you personally the most. But I think as far as across the board, I think income is one that helps people across the board. You can look at the taxes paid by most Iowans, because in Iowa, most small businesses are really taxed as individuals through their structure, LLCs and that sort of thing. So there would be pretty broad impact if we did something with an income tax reform bill, and it would affect most Iowans, I think.
Is there room in an election year for a broad impacting tax bill?
You know, I think, as I said earlier, I think we'd have to come to some kind of agreement relatively early, at least conceptually. Then I think we'd have plenty of time to work out the details. But if if we can't do that, then I think it's hard to get it completed this year. But I think having the discussions is still a positive thing.
There has been a lot of talk at the federal level about raising the minimum wage. Mm-hmm. Is it time for an increase in Iowa's minimum wage?
You know, I don't know. I think as that question has come up in the last few weeks and perhaps month, we have asked some questions about gathering data, finding information, because I think it is appropriate from time to time to have that discussion. And so that's fine. We can do that. I think Senator Courtney pointed out that the last time we did this, it took about 4 years to accomplish it. But at least half of our caucus has that was here for the last vote supported it. So I think there's support out there finding the correct number and really understanding what the unintended consequences might be. All of those kinds of things are important, I think, as we move forward. So again, having a discussion is probably fair. I think we'll have to see, but it usually isn't done quickly, and especially in a topic that was only raised perhaps in Washington in the last month. So I don't know if there's much there beyond
Some
rhetoric.
So it won't be a priority in the House to bring it up.
I'm sure it will be the priority of some individuals in the House, and those individuals will get a fair hearing, and we'll have that discussion.
Moving on to infrastructure, will there be any effort to repair Iowa's crumbling infrastructure this year?
Well, it's my understanding that we're actually going to be devoting more dollars to roads in this fiscal year than we have at any time in the past. So absolutely, roads will get attention, bridges will get attention, but we'll have to see if that is adequate to meet the demands of the out years, because I think that's really the bigger issue. Is are we going to have adequate resources into the future? Because I think we probably do have a fair amount of resources for this year.
We've heard a gas tax increase is unlikely to be debated this year. Are there other funding measures that you're considering or members of your caucus are considering?
Well, we will take the director's ideas seriously, look at them, and some of them we will probably cast aside. Others we'll give more consideration, because I suspect there are some in there that make a lot of sense that we'd move forward on. However, I don't think any of them, perhaps even in combination of multiples, would raise enough revenue to actually meet the potential decline of the gas tax. So I think we're going to have to remain vigilant and study this issue and see where there are opportunities for support, so we do maintain an infrastructure that adequately meets the needs of Iowans.
The governor, moving on to education, has said that he will push a measure for bullying prevention. What shape might a proposal take in your chamber?
You know, I'm not sure what that – we will certainly start with the governors. We will look at the governors, and I'm told that looks a little different than it did last year. So we'll take that and see if we have the support for that. But I'm told that it has much more parental engagement, and that's really what was kind of missing, we thought, last year, that there wasn't much parental involvement and engagement. So if that's what it does, I think we will be very interested in it.
Have there been any ideas floated in your caucus?
I don't think, independent of the governor, I'm just not aware of any outside of what the governor's proposal is, because I think they've all kind of been working together on the ideas from the bullying summit, from the governor and the lieutenant governor's work, and our members have been engaged with that as well to hear what's going on with that.
Another priority that the governor outlined this morning in his weekly press conference with reporters was, he said he wants to expand broadband access across the state. Is this a priority that you share?
Well, I think that's really an interesting perspective, and I absolutely do think that that's a great initiative to evaluate and see what we can do on, because as we look across Iowa, areas where there isn't access to broadband, I think are places where we will not be able to have as much opportunity. I think of even people that might be able to telework. If you don't have broadband internet, you can't very likely do that. Additionally, small businesses that might start up, entrepreneurs that might want to engage in a startup, it's hard to do if you don't have access to good bandwidth. So I think that's an important thing to do, and understanding exactly where those pockets are, where we need more infrastructure, and where we can leverage initiatives that the state might be helpful with. I think those are our places that we should evaluate and discuss, because I think it'd be good for Iowa.
So like the bullying prevention legislation, that's something you'd wait for to see what the governor's priority is. Are there ideas, again, floating in your caucus about changes that could be made?
Oh, I'm sure there are ideas floating. So absolutely, people are thinking about these issues. But we have been here, you know, we've heard that the governor has this initiative, and we're told that his bills will be to us fairly quickly. So while I'm sure people are having idea, talking about this with folks probably across between chambers and beginning the work, we'll certainly look at the governor's work as well, so that we're making to the extent that we can all get on the same page quickly, I think then we can get work done in a very efficient way. And so if there's a pride of ownership, we'll certainly respect that where we can.
In an election year, there's been a lot of conversation about what happened last year with Senator Sorensen, some of the work that he did for getting paid and for the national campaigns that he was involved in. Are there rules that could be changed to increase transparency for lawmakers in the House when they're involved with national campaigns?
You know, we've talked about this a little bit, and I am a huge supporter of transparency. So if there are ways that we could make this process more transparent, I will support that completely. We've talked a little bit about potentially looking at the report filings. We file that report every January. We disclose who we work for, where our revenue comes from, that sort of thing. And maybe we change it so that if you have a change, you need to amend your report or something along those lines. But I think transparency really is the solution to this. So I'm in total support of ways we can be more transparent with it.
In House rules, it's my understanding that they're different from the Senate. Is that right?
That is correct, in that there is no prohibition. We have had members on both sides of the aisle on staff for presidential campaigns in the past. I don't believe it's ever been a problem. It's ever reflected badly on the institution. But I think it is important that we make that transparent. I think that's far more important to Iowans that they know that they're engaged in as paid staff for a presidential campaign than the fact that they are. Because honestly, lots and lots of people are engaged as volunteers, and The transparency seems to be the issue there.
Moving on, medical marijuana has been talked about a lot, given that many surrounding states have approved the use of medical marijuana. Is that debate likely to gain any traction this year in the Iowa State House?
You know, I guess we'll see. But one of the things that I've observed is there's no state that seems to have this quite figured out yet. So when I talk to people at home and when I talk to law enforcement, they are all extremely reluctant to have us move forward quickly. Now, I will say that, you know, we're not trying to be insensitive to people that have medical needs. So we're certainly going to listen and learn. But I'd sure like to see a state be successful in how they manage this and figure out how to do it before we go wading into this, what can be a problem and what is for many states.
Now, there has been an effort by advocates to use New Mexico as an example of a state where limited policy has been successful. So, but you're saying no debate here about it. Let's wait and see how other states craft
legislation. I'm sure there are people looking at the New Mexico model. I'm happy to do that as well. But I don't see things moving quickly toward that result.
Many states are also considering efforts to regulate e-cigarettes. You see a role in state government in doing that?
You know, I think there's certainly a role to perhaps look at access by minors. It's my understanding that voluntarily everybody's pretty much handling them that way, treating them like they do tobacco for access to minors. So, but we may want to include that. Beyond that, I'm not hearing a lot of support. So I think we'll study the issue, look at what this market really is about, look at the science, the studies out there, and see where our members want to go.
Another big issue here in Iowa has been around the Environmental Protection Agency announcing late last year it was reducing the amount of ethanol required mixed in gasoline, known as the Renewable Fuel Standard. It's caused a lot of concern. There's going to be a hearing here in Iowa. How likely could something be resolved at the state level to keep more ethanol in gasoline, or is it more about influencing the EPA?
It's more about influencing the EPA, I believe. I mean, certainly Iowa can lead by having an attitude of support and supporting, biofuels in the state. But at the end of the day, if the EPA backs up on the renewable fuel standard and says that any new renewable fuel has to come out of the sort of the bundle of renewable fuel that is currently in existence, then that the only one that can affect, obviously, is ethanol. So there will be a very disproportionate effect on one industry, which is probably not very fair. But at the end of the day, the renewable fuels is something that I thought the EPA and others supported, and our energy independence and having clean energy, all those things. So I'm a little puzzled by the initiative to back up on that. And we think it just creates, once again, uncertainty in the market, uncertainty in the business place, and it makes more and more people reluctant to invest in any kind of renewable fuel, whether it's solar, whether it's anything, if, in fact, the EPA is going to simply back up on it in the future. So we'll see how this goes. But I think independently, there's probably not a lot the state can do on its own.
Except make your voices heard.
Exactly. And we will likely do that.
The Regents universities have been able to freeze tuition for the past 2 years for the first time since 1975. Is funding the universities in order to allow them to maintain that freeze for another year a priority for your caucus in this session?
You know, we believe it's important that students have more and more affordable college tuition. We've asked the Regents, we've asked all of the colleges and universities to be to take a good hard look at how they do business, look at their administration, look at how they do business, and see where there are opportunities for them to be more effective, more efficient, and actually lower tuition without being backfilled from the state. But at the end of the day, it is something that we support. It is, we think it's important that we do that. Perhaps not only for law students, but for other students, we want to make their education more affordable. And we think that will attract people to Iowa, keep students in Iowa, and be good for Iowans long term. I think there are other ways we can approach it as well, and perhaps we'll explore some of those too.
Now, I know it's a divided legislature and an election year, and so everyone seems to agree that big things are not likely to get accomplished this session, but this is an election year. If this was not a divided legislature, if Republicans controlled both chambers, what might an agenda perfect case look like for your party?
You know, that's a really interesting question, because as I think back on when either party has sort of owned the trifecta, sometimes those were the toughest years. It's hard to know which things might be possible and which things might be impossible, even more so than when you have to work on building consensus between two opposing parties in an election year. But make no mistake, there's lots of ideas and lots of opinions around the legislature, and whether you belong to the same party or not, there's not always 100% agreement. But I think we would certainly be looking at how we could put more of the taxpayers' dollars back into their pockets.
Okay, Representative Upmeyer, that's where we have to end this conversation. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
River to River is produced by Sarah Bowden, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from John Pimble. I'm Clay Masters. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.